Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Joe Zimmel and Valerie Friedman.
From Connecticut Public Radio in Hartford, this is Seasoned. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. Maple syrup season is almost over. Coming up this hour, we visit the Independent Day School in Middlefield, where students learn the art and science of maple syrup making starting in kindergarten. Later in the show, producer Tegan Engel walks through the forest with Jeremy Whipple of the Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Nation. There are tapped trees and blue tubing running the sap as far as the eye can see. Learn about the history behind the Pequot maple syrup and how it's made today. Plus, Tegan makes some candied pecans with maple and rosemary. Sounds good, right? But first, science teacher Xander Lowry is our guide as we tap trees, gather sap, split wood, and make syrup with students in his third, fifth, and eighth grade classes. You'll hear from some of those kids about the syrup making process and how it brings the community together.
I'm Xander Lowry, and I am the kindergarten through sixth grade science teacher, and also teach a thing called Maker Lab here at the Independent Day School in Middlefield. Leading the chaos or managing the chaos? It's hard to say. All right, so friends and neighbors, we are going to, as a third grade class, go into the forest today, and we're going to find two of my beloved trees in the forest, and we will put taps in them in order to get their sap and make it into syrup. Cool? All right, forward march.
Got energy today?
Every day.
Yeah.
Friends and neighbors, gather at this tree. So how do I know that's a sugar maple leaf? When you look at it, what says sugar maple about it?
There are 5 points on it, and you can memorize that how that maple has 5 letters in it.
Good, so it's got the 5 points, and then it's got this little curved lobe here, and then the inside of the leaves are straight-edged and slightly curved. Well, this one has 5 points, but it's jagged around the edges, like a red maple. And what we think this is a hybrid. It's a mix of sugar maple and red maple. We found that it had 2% sugar in the sap, which is consistent with the sugar levels in a sugar maple. But it's got bark like a red maple, so it was kind of a forest mystery. But we're gonna tap this tree. So the first thing we're gonna do is put a hole in the tree. Does this hurt the tree, third grade?
It's like getting a shot.
It's like when you get a shot. It hurts, but you get better, right? You get it. Oh, see, Max, you read my mind. Max is over here. He's got the tap extended to me as I'm about to ask him. I don't even need to ask. We got that synergy happening now. Now, this is the part where we're gonna put that in. Abby, come on over. And we'll just take turns. Abby, give it a tap, tap. So
it might be too small for this, but.
No, you can do it. Use two hands and then just, you want to hit right there.
Right.
Yep.
Yummy. Theo.
All right, if you're ready to take the challenge, line up over here behind Theo and you can come by. And then it's dripping. So if you get right under it and hold your mouth open, you can let the sap drip right in your mouth. That's exciting. Oh yeah, living the dream. Living the dream. I love that flow. Look at that.
It's so good. Yum, 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 yum.
Drip, drip, drip. I mean, that's like 50, 60 drips an hour.
Really?
Minute, 50 drips. That's flowing pretty fast. But look at that, it's really pumping. We may have to boil later in the week just to keep up. And in the meantime, I'm standing with one hand on what we call the grandmother maple tree. It's one of the biggest sugar maple trees we have here on campus. And it, when it has leaves, it shades this cleared area with some benches that we call the maple classroom, that was cleared with student help, mostly eighth graders, and then mulched with various grades, bringing wood chips down. And then the benches themselves were designed by an eighth grader 3 years ago. And the design was inspired by salvage materials and repurposed materials that we had. And it was designed and implemented with student support from top to bottom.
It's beautiful.
Thanks.
Can you tell me what inspired you to start the maple syrup program here at the Independent Day School, and how has it evolved since 2020?
I mean, the short answer is Jim Rumberger, our head of facilities, right? I showed up in August before the students arrived my first year and was doing some cleaning out and setting up of the science room. And he poked his head in and he said, "I got this idea." And he described our sort of, at that time, sort of idea around a maple sugaring program. I said, "That sounds cool. Let's do that." And then that fall, we did a survey of our site. You know, he said, "I know there are some sugar maples out there." But when we did the survey, we found a lot of them. And most of them are concentrated on this one wide swath of trail that used to be the old Durham Road. It was historically the road that connected Durham and Middlefield. So somebody historically, I think, planted those on either side. And we did it. It worked. And we said, let's keep doing it and growing it and making it better. And how has it evolved? Our infrastructure has changed a little bit. We're still using essentially the same evaporator, but we've added a fan. We've moved the location of the object. And now we have what we call the Maple Pavilion, which is just an outdoor pavilion. Last year's eighth grade gift was specifically earmarked for our sugaring program, and that got us the slab that the evaporator sits on. But the whole program is essentially now at this point self-sustaining. We added a reverse osmosis machine, and that doubles the sugar concentration in the sap, or removes half the water, depending on how you want to look at it.
Really efficiently.
So we've upped our efficiencies, and all of our systems kind of evolve every year. Today is a big day because we had lots of full buckets. Lots of full buckets means what?
A lot of sap.
A
lot of maple syrup.
Which means leads to a lot of maple syrup. But before that happens, we need to get the buckets from the forest to the evaporator, right?
Yep.
So I love your enthusiasm. We might bring in all the buckets right now. Given the like energy level that we have right now, we might bring in all the buckets. But it's better to bring back one bucket completely full than five buckets with 20% of the sap slopped out and lost. Because, right, these trees worked so hard all summer. Yes, photosynthesizing and making that sugar, storing that sugar and starch. And we don't want to throw it away. We also love syrup, so we want to make as much as we can. One bucket is often more than a fifth grader is ready to carry by herself or his himself. And so one way we get that's really kind of old school here is just grab like one of those and
put one bucket on.
Exactly. You've seen this done before, right?
Yeah.
So Jahan, come join me. So Jahan and I will then, right, it's sort of the opposite of like the traditional yoke with two buckets on either side. It's just, we've reversed that. Two students, one bucket. Yeah. So good. Yeah, you need like nice, really big sticks. And you don't have to do that. If you can carry a bucket on your own, that's great. And then the other way we'll do it is we'll put two buckets here. And anytime we're pulling the sled, some of you may already know this, there's one person pulling and at least one person in the back stabilizing the buckets. Everyone got it? All right, well then going nice and slow, and let's do this methodically, okay? We're gonna move from south to north. So we'll get that bucket, that bucket, that bucket, that bucket, right? But go ahead, start collecting sap. You are ready to rock and roll. I can stop talking, you can start collecting.
My name's Allegra, and my favorite part of making maple syrup is bringing it back to the maple pavilion and just watching how it works. Even though it's tough, I like bringing the maple syrup back. We just work together as a team a lot, and sometimes it's hard to carry the buckets because they're really heavy, but using the stick helps with two people or more to bring it up.
My name is Jahan. Even though it's hard, I like a good challenge, and I also like sometimes tasting the sugared water. Usually I only get to do it once a year, but that's what makes it fun.
My name's Malik, and one of the ways that going to get the sap and stuff makes me feel part of the community is that once it's done, we're able to share it. So it's one of the many ways that we get to know each other in the community. I feel like maple syrup around the fall and winter kind of brings the whole community together because that's a whole community project. And it's also like fun because we get to work together.
My name is Evan, and a key step in making maple syrup is you have to work together with other people. You have to know how to collaborate and use cooperation with others. Because it's like, it's a team effort. We're a community, and you want to work together as a team to make everything the best that it can.
Yep, a good talk.
At this point, the fifth graders pair up. Some of them are hanging a mostly full bucket by its handle on a large branch. Others are setting buckets on sleds to be pulled to the Maple Pavilion.
How you doing, Evan?
I got it.
Awesome.
Nice. There we go. We have five buckets. No, we have four buckets.
We have five buckets. We need to get this sap back to the evaporator because we don't want that evaporating pan to get too low because then it scorches and we get funky flavored syrup, and we need to not lose sight of the goal that what we want is delicious maple syrup at the end of this process.
You got this.
And the sleds are off, slow and steady over the snow. The kids love teamwork, and this is where it all pays off. But they still stop to appreciate nature.
Yeah, bald eagle, right there, right there.
Incoming sap will go here. Incoming sap kind of right here.
It's so much bucket work. It's all buckets.
I see. Well, we'll spice this morning in there, huh? And then we're going to dump it into this 275-gallon tank that we will draw with our reverse osmosis.
The fifth graders then learn all about reverse osmosis from Jim Runberger, Xander's partner in all of this. So I pull Xander aside to ask how maple syrup making fits into the science curriculum.
It's not so much trying to shoehorn the sugaring into the science curriculum as such. It's understanding where the sugar comes from, how it's moving in the tree, and how to get it, and then what we're doing with it. It's just, the science is baked in. So, I mean, I always ask the students, when we make maple syrup, right, are we making sugar? And even the littlest ones now know to say, absolutely not, we are not making sugar. Who made the sugar? And they all know to say, the trees. And then you say, how did that happen? And if they know, great, it's a touchstone for talking about photosynthesis. If they don't, it's still a touchstone for talking about photosynthesis, right? The sugar-making process is photosynthesis, right? Understanding that leaves are just little sugar-making factories.
And we love sugar.
Yeah, and then there's tree structure built in, right? Which then leads to a conversation about dendrochronology. But understanding the structure of the tree is important. Understanding where the xylem and the phloem, the tubes that move the fluids in the tree, where they are and how deep to make that hole. Much of the science is baked in.
You're hearing Xander Lowry from the Independent Day School in Middlefield. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. We're in science class outside making maple syrup with Xander's students. After a short break, the science lesson continues. Eighth graders join in to chop wood to keep the evaporator going and the sap boiling. And more students tell me about the best part of making maple syrup at school.
My name is Theodore Agley, and the favorite part about sap is, well, eating it.
This is Seasoned. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford HealthCare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford HealthCare. ECMO is a leading-edge, life-saving treatment for patients with cardiac or respiratory failure. Dr. Jason Gluck, director of the Mechanical Circulatory Support Program and Emergency Cardiac Care at Hartford Hospital, explains what it is.
So ECMO stands for extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, outside the body oxygenation of blood. It's a life support technique that's used by highly sophisticated medical systems for patients with severe heart or lung failure. The technique involves removing blood from the body, oxygenating it, and then returning it back.
ECMO procedures happen in the ICU, but not all hospitals are equipped with the necessary technology and staff. Dr. Gluck describes Hartford Hospital's ECMO Go team.
So ECMO is considered when treatments have failed, and in our center, with a special ECMO on the Go team, we'll actually take that technology to their hospital and help them out there if they need to stabilize the patient and then bring them back to heart for recovery.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
Welcome back to Seasoned, everyone. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. Before the break, third graders at the Independent Day School in Middlefield tapped two of the school's maple trees. Then the fifth graders carried full buckets of sap to the Maple Pavilion, where it's filtered and boiled. We left off with science teacher Xander Lowry describing how he bakes maple syrup making into the curriculum. In a moment, the eighth graders pitch in, and you'll hear more from students about what they love about their school's maple syrup. But first, I ask Xander to talk about the challenges of tapping trees and maple sugaring in a changing climate.
One of the phrases we use a lot around here is Mother Nature bats last. So people ask all the time, well, when's maple sugaring season? And the answer is whenever the conditions are right. So part of what tappers and sappers and maple sugaring enthusiasts do is watch the weather real closely, yeah? And when we start to see the cold overnight temperatures that cause the gases in the tree to contract, and then the warm daytime that has those same gas bubbles expanding, creative positive and negative pressure that creates the flow in the tree, we start to go, ooh, it's going to run. That sap's going to run. So climate is critical. In terms of the challenges it presents, I mean, the unpredictability of the weather can make it challenging or unappealing to be outside for some people.
It's cold today.
It's chilly today, and we had a little wintry mix this morning. The snow is a great asset for us. It allows us to mound the snow around the buckets in order to preserve the sap, because that becomes a critical piece. If you have a lot of sap and you're not ready to boil and you've just got this sugary water sitting out, well, it rots. It gets funky, right?
Yeah.
So preserving the sap is a challenge. We don't have a walk-in fridge that'll hold, you know, 100, 200 gallons of sap. So we have to think of a way to preserve it. And the snow is also easier to move sap around on because we can pull the sleds through the snow. And 10 gallons of sap can be moved by two third graders on snow very readily because yeah. It's the sliding of the sled.
Yeah, I saw a couple of fifth graders having a grand old time doing that.
That's right. I always get a kick out of seeing the students rally and figure out ways to get the sap out of the forest, because that really does require, as our students identified, a significant amount of sort of coordination and teamwork. Every year, seeing the finished product in the bottles with the labels designed by students all laid out, that's always exciting.
A tangible and delicious result of
accurate.
All their hard work.
Mm-hmm. This is a lifetime apprenticeship. I can't imagine ever getting to the point where we could just sit back in our rocking chairs and say, we got this, because it's an ever-changing playing field, right? We're working with the forest. One of the highlights for me is it connects me and our students to the forest in this really tangible and meaningful way. And it tunes us in. I mean, we start paying attention to the trees in a much deeper way, right? It gets us tuned in to the forest in a cool way. It gets us tuned into the weather patterns in a cool way. It gets us tuned into the seasons in a cool way, right? Because it is completely condition specific, which is really about the seasons.
The teamwork continues as the eighth graders arrive. The middle schoolers take turns with an axe and chop wood to keep the evaporator boiling that sap into syrup. The kids love this part. And don't worry, their trusted teacher and Jim are supervising.
Perfect. That's it! Woo!
it'll take 43 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup. Sometimes Xander and Jim stay late into the night, boiling the syrup and getting it ready to bottle. Parents help, too. In fact, there's a parent volunteer here today. Bill Agley has a third grader. But right now, Bill's eyes are on the eighth graders with the axe.
And now the fun part. Can you hand that to Mr. Rumberger?
Once the axe is safely put away, I ask Xander what he hopes the kids get out of making maple syrup at school.
I hope that students come away with a better sense of their connection, their visceral kind of corporal connection with wild nature, that this wild natural product goes to sustain their bodies and flavor their pancakes, and it's a very tangible kind of entry point to that kind of connection with wild nature. And I hope that what that leads to is a sense of stewardship for their world, for their environment. I hope that they come away with an understanding that the trees make the sugar, and we just put it through a process, right? That what we really owe this whole thing to is sun, soil, water, and air. Because everything you eat and everything you wear comes from sun, soil, water, and air. With few exceptions. And this is a very tangible way to see that and feel that and taste that.
Yeah.
One of the highlights for me is getting kids keyed into the forest. And one of the ways I know they're really keyed in and paying attention is when they get really excited about tree identification. And it happens every year that there are one or two students who really get excited about that and are very proud of themselves and get that search image together pretty quickly and completely. And they're able to identify the sugar maples versus the red maples, or maples versus other trees. And then when I get the parents coming back and saying, oh, everywhere we go now, you know, she's telling me that about the different trees, and everywhere we go is, Mom, that's a red maple. Dad, that's a sugar maple. That excites me about as much as anything, just because my hope is that that's a person who for, you know, at least some of their natural life is excited about wild nature and the forest and trees. I mean, I'm a tree enthusiast, so if I can share that with people, that's groovy. Yeah.
Science class is hard work during sugaring season, but it's also got its rewards. I want to give the kids the last word here. Before they head to recess, a few fifth and third graders share their thoughts about making maple syrup at school.
So my name's Ian Wozniak, and a memory that's really stuck with me about making maple syrup is just like the joy of community and working with others. I've been here for 3 years, and this is my second year being involved with maple syrup, and I think it's just a really great opportunity to get to work with other students, and I've created a lot of bonds, being able to work with my friends, maybe some people I don't talk to much, and just it's such a wonderful sense of community just by making maple syrup, and I love it. And I think just with the process of it, just every little aspect from carrying buckets together to helping cut wood for the stove, and it's all just a part of the experience. And I think that's what makes it such a fun day whenever we get to do it.
How has it helped you be a better science student?
I would say it's definitely helped me be a better science student because I've learned more about processes and how you can start at square one with something simple like sap and turn it into something that is very useful, especially for breakfast. And it's one of the best things I have tasted in maple syrup.
Tell me about it. How does your maple syrup taste?
It's very rich. It has a nice smoky flavor to it, which I really love about it. And it's so rich that you can just taste it, whatever you use it in, cooking, on pancakes, whatever. It just makes the experience 10 times better. I would like more people to know about just how much community is involved and how that really contributes to the experience and how you can, with a small process, make something that'll last a lifetime in terms of memories and ideas, and I love it.
I'm Marilyn Jones, and one of my favorite parts of making maple syrup at school is getting to connect with my classmates and like really work on teamwork building to make something like maple syrup, because it's really not a one-person task, and it's really kind of a bonding experience to work on making something like this together as a school.
I'm Alexis Booth, and some highlights of my time here making maple syrup are definitely just getting the overall education about it, because I would have never known the process of making maple syrup So like how it starts from, like, it basically looks like water, and then they have to like caramelize it, filter it, then put it through this whole long process just to make this much maple syrup, just a very itsy-bitsy bit.
I'm Kylie Levesque. I got maple syrup from here, and I tried it, and it was just a lot richer. It tasted much better than the grocery store ones.
My name is Eugenie Quan McLean, and something that's awesome about maple sugaring is tapping the trees.
My name is Gabriella Cortez, and my favorite thing about maple syrup is also tapping the trees.
My name is Lila DiTuccio, and my favorite thing about sap is eating it.
My name is Maxwell Gilliard, and my favorite thing about sap is eating it with my pancakes.
My name is Noah Covey, and the best thing about sap is it's a fun experience to do with your school and yummy yummy.
My name is Theodore Agley, and the favorite part about sap is, well, eating it.
Those were the voices of Xander Lowry's students at the Independent Day School in Middlefield. Thank you so much to Xander and all the kids who let me join their science class. And a very special thank you to Facilities Director Mr. Jim Rumberger. He made me a short stack of perfectly golden pancakes. And let me tell you, they are making maple magic over there at the Independent Day School. Before we go to break, I want to tell you about one more school with a really cool maple sugaring program. Common Ground is a high school and urban farm in New Haven focused on environmental education. It has community maple sugaring events throughout the season, plus classes anyone can join, and you don't have to be a student. The next sugaring event is this weekend. For information, go to Common Ground Connecticut on Facebook. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. After a short break, Tegan Engel also heads to the forest and tastes the Pequot maple syrup made at the Mashantucket Sugar Shack.
It tastes like caramelly, like a little taste of honey in it almost.
Yep, it's like buttery almost.
Yeah, wow.
You're listening to Seasoned on Connecticut Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Seasoned. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. Next up, a much larger maple sugaring operation. At the Mashantucket Sugar Shack, its Pequot maple syrup continues a tradition going back hundreds of years.
My name is Jeremy Whipple. I am the farm manager with the Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Nation Department of Agriculture.
Producer Tegan Engel met up with Jeremy at the Lake of Isles Forest. That's where Jeremy and his team tap thousands of maple trees to make their syrup. It generates income for the Pequot Nation, but it also educates their next generation of forest stewards. For Jeremy and others in the tribe, the syrup is important for two reasons. First, it's an indigenous ancestral food. And second, it's critical to achieving food sovereignty, which is when people control their own food ways and have sustainably grown, culturally connected, nourishing foods. Ahead, Jeremy gives Tegan a tour of the sugar shack and shows off the tech that cooks down 150 gallons of maple sap an hour. But before making their way to the shack, they meet up in the forest to talk.
Hi.
Hello.
Could you start by just telling us, what is your earliest memory of gathering maple sap and making maple syrup?
So I've been doing it since I was a young boy, like 10 years old, with my uncles and other people from the community, family members from the community. You know, it started at the Sugar Shack, and before we had all this nice technology, we used to do everything by buckets. So it's pretty challenging compared to the land that they gave us from what we usually had. It's all rocks. So it's very hard to harvest buckets of full sap coming down hills with rocks everywhere. So it was challenging. But thanks to the new technology, it makes it a lot easier to harvest and, you know, more efficient. My Uncle Robert brought us down to the sugar shack after, you know, it hasn't been run in years. And that memory of, you know, reviving it back up was all I can remember. And that's, you know, and it kind of got lost again. And in 2010, that memory drove me to get it going again. And now we're here. So that memory plays a big role in what we have right now. Mm. So it was instilled in me, yeah.
Can you tell me, how do you say maple syrup or maple sap in Pequot?
It's pronounced wiki paik, and that means sweet soup or sweet water.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know, we've been, you know, reviving our language. So in our whole building, this whole process of the food sovereignty and stuff, we're incorporating the language in all of our stuff now. Because it's just going to help speed up the process, having the words everywhere. Because we have the kids come down. You know, we do a lot with the youth. So we try to incorporate everything we can culturally to keep it, you know, fresh in their minds.
Yeah, that's great. I saw that you made a new label for your maple syrup, and it now has Wiki Paik and yes. Sweet Soup on the label, which is really yeah. beautiful.
It's like our brand, so we want to get it right. Our business manager actually helped design that label, and I thought she did a great job because it's really cultural significance. So
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about the importance, the cultural significance of maple sap and maple syrup to the Pequot Nation?
So we've been doing this for a long time. Before we had the casino, this is how we made money. We also had pigs and other farming, agricultural initiatives, and it means a lot to us because it's part of our culture. I mean, you know, unfortunately, a lot of our culture got lost. So it's, you know, we've always constantly trying to revive it, and we've come a long way on this side in the language. And I think it's very important because of food sovereignty, and the younger generations coming up need to really understand and believe in that and practice it.
Mm-hmm. When your people talk about the maple moon, what does that mean?
So the maple moon is a harvest moon. So we have full moon is we celebrate and give thanks to the Creator for giving us the sap to produce the syrup. For the past 3-4 years, we've been doing a pancake breakfast in the community to celebrate that. We do prayer and song just to give thanks to the Creator for giving us the sap and a great harvest.
I know, I realized I didn't start by giving thanks for you joining me today. And I feel so grateful and thankful to be on this land with you. It feels really, really special.
Thanks. Thank you. And I appreciate you guys coming here and giving us the opportunity to put our work out there to everybody. So
yeah, absolutely. Historically, were there other uses for sap than maple syrup?
Not to my knowledge. I know that maple syrup was a big staple. You know, they're called Johnny cakes now, but they were called Journey cakes, and it would be put into a sack with maple syrup, and that's what the warriors would bring with them out when they would leave the village, and that's what they would give them energy. So I think that was a big important part of, you know, sustaining them while they were out. So, you know, that's the biggest importance of it.
And before we jump into the process of maple syruping, I have one more question, which is, can you talk a little bit about how you think about your relationship with the forest and with the trees in this process of gathering sap?
Yeah, so the trees and the forest, they're everything to us because that's what gives us our bounty. And, you know, whether it's hunting, foraging for wild plants or nuts and medicinal plants. So, yeah, we take care of it and we treat it just like it's one of our kids, you know, because it takes care of us. We got to take care of it. That's very important to us.
So can you describe a little bit what we're looking at here in the forest around us?
Yeah, so here at the Lake of Isles sugar bush, we have, this is our biggest sugar bush. We've just only scratched the surface here in tapping trees. We're about 3,000 taps right now. But our goal is to hit 8,000 to 10,000 taps. I've been told this is one of the biggest sugar bushes in southern Connecticut, or in Connecticut at all. And we have about a mile of blue line
Blue tubing.
Blue tubing that comes down the hill, and we have it going laterally off the main lines. So we, and the vacuum pump helps capture all the sap, so we're not wasting none. So that's one reason why we use the vacuum pump. And this pump can pull, so every time that releases, it's 40 gallons. And this happens like every 5 minutes.
You have all these lines connected to all the trees, and then they're running to this central place right here where the vacuum is pulling the sap into this big tank.
Right. And then from this big tank, we pump it into this tank on the trailer, and then we bring it to the sugar shack where we process it.
So can you talk a little bit about when sap gathering season was when you were a kid and now what it is?
Yeah, so when I was a kid, there was a season. So, you know, end of February, March would be the time that we would tap trees. Now, you can tap in January, and you can get multiple runs now because of the warming of the climate. It's been tough, and we've been, you know, it's always in our mind, is it ever going to stop? Because if it don't get cold no more, the trees will not produce sap no more. Or they won't run like they usually do, because you need cold nights and warm days. But if it's always warm, what happens?
Yeah. So with the way that the climate crisis is impacting the maple syrup season, what do you do to care for the trees to make sure they're okay if you're tapping them for more time?
Right now, because we're only so small with the tapping, but as we grow, we will section off certain areas that we will take a year off from tapping the trees to let them recover, because they grow quite a bit during the summer. Because when you tap in one spot, it'll be about, you know, what was that, like 5-10 inches, Mike? But you can see the growth in a tree. So, you know, you let that, if you give it a year break, it'll do it significantly. So that's our plan for taking care of the trees as we grow.
Yeah. So what are you going to do with this big tank that's on this trailer?
So this big tank is what we pull out of this big tank. This is a 1,200-gallon tank we have here, which was full this morning. So we'll have to probably make two trips. So we bring this back to the sugar shack, pumping into another 1,200-gallon tank, which is our reserve, because our evaporator does 150 gallons an hour. So we have to have plenty of sap to even fire it up. So that's constantly coming here, going back, making sure our reserves are full so we can cook.
Yeah. So you got 1,200 gallons just overnight?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So.
Cool. Yeah. All right, let's go.
All right.
Just a short drive from the Lake of Isles Forest is the Mashantucket Sugar Shack. The shack is surrounded by forest, so there are trees tapped here too. Jeremy and his team weren't boiling sap the day I visited, but they showed me the high-tech sap evaporator up close, and we talked about the history of the shack.
Before the sugar shack and before everything else, there's a house foundation behind you where Blind Liza used to live, which is one of our ancestors. That house was there, so this would be all gardens at one time. This is where we got pushed up from Mystic after the Pequot War. This is where they made us come, where all the rocks. But we were able to survive and manage, and they turned us into garden areas. If you go out, you can see piles of rocks where they made piles for their garden area. They had to pull all the rocks out to grow.
So this land was just not as, they put you on the land that was covered in rocks, and so not as good for...
Yeah, because they knew that we lived off the land, and you know, I think the purpose was try to starve us out. But it didn't work, obviously. We're pretty resilient people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're still always reviving our culture that they was trying to take from us. So
this was used for gardening. And
right.
Then how did it become the sugar bush where your sugar shack is?
Late 60s, early 70s, my Uncle Skip Hayward and some other tribe members. I know one tribe member, Arlene Boyd, used to drive from New Haven to bring checks to my uncle to help keep the operation going. But this building here is actually the second sugar shack. They built it up on top of the hill where the community center is. And they used to haul the sap up the hill. This is a story that's been passed down to me. I wasn't born yet. And the trailer they were bringing the sap up the hill flipped over, and they lost all their sap. So then they decided to bring it down here which made more sense. This is the original building. When I came back in 2010 and started reviving it, and we got some grants from the NRCS to help replace the old evaporator that we had. NRCS is Natural Conservation Resource.
Services.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's part of the USDA. They helped us get this bridge down here. Because you used to have to drive to the stream, which we didn't want to do that no more, because all this water runs into our aquifer, which is the Great Cedar Swamp right behind us here.
Yeah.
Which is a big glacier, glacier kettle hole. So we didn't want to break oil pan or something, and that oil somehow go down into the water, you know, and poison and ruin the water. So we had this bridge put in to protect the water.
Great. So once you're gathering your sap, you use the vacuum to pull the sap through the tubes. You get it into your tank. You move it into the big tank that goes out on your trailer.
Yeah.
And then you bring it over here, and then we head inside the sugar shack. Let's go take a look. A few notes about the sugar shack. You need lots of space to store sap, especially when you're tapping 3,000 trees. So they have two 1,200-gallon tanks on site and a 300-gallon tank feeding sap into the evaporator when it's time to boil.
So the evaporator boils all the water out of the sap because, you know, sap's about 80% water or 90% water. There's very little sugar in it. And depending on the sugar content in the sap, so there's Jones rule. So it'll take 43 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup. It gets higher as the sugar content goes down.
Is the sugar content of the sap different at different parts of the season?
Yeah, as it gets closer to the trees budding, the sugar content's going to go up. And that's when you start to get your darker syrups because it's taking longer to boil because there's less sugar in it.
Yeah.
So our first run, we'll probably get all fancy, really light syrup.
The dark stuff.
A lot of people like the dark stuff, and some people like the light stuff.
The evaporator is a huge stainless steel machine that fills up most of the building. It's got various pumps and chambers. It's really high tech, and it needs to be. The old evaporator burned so much wood that it wasn't good for the environment. The new one is still wood-fired, but it's more energy efficient, warming each new batch of sap before adding it to the boiling syrup. It can easily handle the thousands of gallons of sap needed to produce Pequot maple syrup. But even with all that tech, simple gravity plays a role. It helps move the sap along as it becomes syrup. As the sugar is concentrated, the syrup gets heavier, changes color, and slides into a finishing pan. Then it's cooled, filtered, and bottled. Now, making this syrup requires a lot of human energy as well. An example, on boiling days, Jeremy and his team load the wood-fired oven by hand every 15 minutes for about 4 or 5 hours to make one batch of syrup. Every step in the process is watched carefully to get that syrup just right. Next door to the sugar shack, there's a prep kitchen building. That's where they pack up fresh produce from the nation's farm to distribute to tribal members. It's also where they bottle the maple syrup, so we head in to try some. Can we taste some of this delicious syrup? I really want to try it. We've heard from amazing chef Sherry Pocknett of the Mashpee Wampanoags that this is the best syrup ever. She said this was the best syrup in all the land. All right, so we have some of this gorgeous syrup.
Cheers. I love it.
Oh my God. So delicious. It tastes like caramelly, like a little little taste of honey in it almost.
Yep. It's like buttery almost.
Yeah. Wow. My mouth is just full of this really rich, delicious. Yeah buttery is a good is a good description. And it was a little bit light. I expected it not to have as rich of a taste, but it's really rich and delicious.
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness, I'm in heaven right now. I just want to drink that.
It's great. Mm. Yeah, we have some tricks we can't tell you.
I can tell. It's delicious. Wow.
It's good on ice cream. Mm. If you say you bring this home and you cook it a little bit to get it caramelly, and then you put it on the ice cream, it'll kind of like harden up. So it's like, it's really nice.
All right. Tell me how to say the name one more time.
It's Wiki Paik.
Wiki Paik.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing your delicious Wiki Paik with us.
Thank you.
Really beautiful. Thank you for your time.
Sherry Lyon, is it the best syrup you had?
Sherry was not lying.
That was Tegan Engel with Jeremy Whipple. He's the manager of the Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Nation and executive director of the Tribal Department of Agriculture. Jeremy is also the project manager of the Mashantucket Sugar Shack. You can find Pequot maple syrup at Mystic Market, Foxwoods, The Outpost, the Pequot Museum, and soon enough, online. We'll have photos of Jeremy and a link to the shack's website on our show page, ctpublic.org/seasoned. Want more ideas for cooking with maple syrup? You know Tegan's a trained chef, right? Let's pop into her kitchen. She's making maple rosemary glazed pecans.
Something that I love about working with a sweet ingredient like maple syrup is to actually play with the sweet, salty, savory elements and not just make it sweet. So this is a great combination. I love rosemary together with the sweet and salty. So we're going to start by taking 2 cups of pecans and put them into a bowl. We're going to take 3 tablespoons of maple syrup and drizzle it on top. You're really just trying to get enough maple syrup to give a light coating to the nuts. If there's too much, then when it cooks, it's gonna pool and burn, and we don't want that. But 3 tablespoons for 2 cups of nuts should be just right. And it's okay to lick your fingers. After you put the maple syrup on the nuts, give them a quick toss with a spatula or a spoon to get them nicely coated in the maple syrup. The syrup smells so good and caramelly. Now we're just going to add about 1/4 teaspoon of salt. If you like them a little saltier, feel free to add a little bit more. And you'll add 1/2 teaspoon of dry rosemary, or you can also use fresh chopped rosemary. Sprinkle that on your nuts and toss away. I also love the addition of some pepper to give it a nice little spice, a nice little kick. Fresh ground pepper is my favorite. Toss it around again. And now you're just going to line a baking sheet with parchment paper or aluminum foil so that the caramel doesn't stick to the pan. Once you have your nuts nicely coated, pour them onto your prepared baking pan and spread them out into a single even layer. Now you're going to put them in the oven at 350 degrees and keep a close eye on them. They usually cook for about 12 or 13 minutes, but I check them around 8 or 9 or 10 minutes to make sure they're not burning. At around 12 or 13 minutes, when they look nice and dark but not burned, take them out of the oven. And you're going to let them cool for about 15 minutes before you touch them. Once the nuts are fully cool, you're going to just lift up the paper or foil and break them apart. They might have stuck a little bit. They're shiny, they smell delicious. I can't wait to eat them. Oh my goodness. The taste of maple syrup and rosemary to me is just heaven. Another thing I love to do with the same combination of maple and rosemary is a chicken apple asparagus dish. It's great for the spring. You can also do it with tofu or another vegetarian protein if you're vegetarian. What you'll do is essentially the same as what you did with the nuts. Just toss whichever protein you're using with some maple syrup, fresh or dry rosemary, salt and pepper, and then saute each of the elements separately. So your chicken or your tofu, your sliced apples, and steam your asparagus, and then toss them in. It's delicious and really easy. The apples can be overwintered from the fall, and the asparagus can be fresh from the spring together with your new maple syrup. So it can be a great seasonal dish. I hope you have fun playing with some maple syrup and finding some uses beyond your pancakes.
That was Tegan Engel. I'm Robin Doyon Aiken. Seasoned is produced by me and Tegan and
Meg Dalton,
Stephanie Stender,
Catrice Claudio,
Meg Fitzgerald,
Scout Raimondo,
Sabrina Herrera,
Francesca Fontanez, Martha Castillo, and Shanice Rule are on our social team as well. To keep up with the latest on Seasoned, follow at CT Public on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And we're at WNPR on X. Catch this and past episodes of Seasoned wherever you get your podcasts. And subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you like the show, do us a favor and rate it on Apple Podcasts. Give us all the stars. It really does help other food lovers find us. And if you want to know what we're cooking up every month, subscribe to the Full Plate newsletter. I load it up with recipes from cookbooks I love, links to recent episodes, and gardening tips from Charlie Nardozzi. Get out there and garden! Go to ctpublic.org/newsletters to sign up. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next time.